Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. It's Monday, July the 8th. Hope you had a very good 4th of July and celebrated America's birthday properly with all the activities that were going on. So hopefully everybody had a good time this past Thursday. And I guess NASCAR did it right, celebrating the 4th of July weekend with the Firecracker 250 and the Coke Zero 400 down in Daytona. And there were a lot of fireworks down there, especially late in the race on Saturday night. No rain delays to worry about. There was a red flag, but we'll get to more of that later. My guest tonight will be NHRA Top Fuel rookie driver Brittany Force will be joining us and be our first time on the show. Of course, sister Courtney was on last year, as well as John and Papa John and brother-in-law Robert over the course of time, the past couple years. So, and Ashley, of course. So this pretty much rounds out the whole Force family. Of course, Robert Height is married to one of the Force girls, Brittany's oldest sister, so he's part of the family too. So we'll be talking to Brittany and welcoming her to the show. And unfortunately, she didn't have a too good a weekend out in Norwalk, Ohio, and didn't make the elimination round, which is her first time, I think, this season. But she's in a tough division, and, you know, things like that are bound to happen. Being, I guess, with all the rest of the family in the funny car division, at least she kept it in the nitro, and we'll have to wait. And, yeah, we'll talk to her a little bit about that, you know, deciding to go Top Fuel and why that instead of funny car when pretty much the family's got everything tuned in. Of course, I'm sure she's running a Ford motor in that Top Fuel dragster, because that's what the Force family, John Force Racing, runs and everything else. And they should pretty much, with all the development they have into that Boss 500 Nitro motor, and why not take it to that Top Fuel division? I don't know if there's too many Fords in the division, so we'll talk to her about that when she gets here, of course. And the return of IndyCar to Pocono. We might as well start it off there, up in the Pocono Mountains, the Tricky Triangle. 34 years since IndyCar has been there. Of course, it was the Kart Series the last time it was there. That's before the split with the IRL. And my first ever, I think my first race that I ever saw live of the big leagues was the IndyCar race at Pocono. And way back then, Mario Andretti was still driving. That ought to tell you how long ago. I think it was 86. So Mario Andretti outdueled Bobby Rahal. Of course, Rahal having problems in that race, and it was Andretti's first ever win at Pocono, and I happened to be there. Of course, that was one of three 500-mile events that the Kart Series ran. Was that being the race in Michigan, the race in Pocono? It used to be called the Indy of the East, and Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Of course, Pocono being 2.5 miles in a triangular configuration, three different corners, minimalist banking, but even different degrees of that, that made it interesting for the Indy cars getting around there. Of course, that event was seemed to be going to look like it was going to be an Andretti race to be had, because Marco qualified on the pole. Of course, that would be the hometown track to his family, other than Nazareth Speedway, which closed down several years ago. I think in the mid-2000s I was there for that one, the final event at Nazareth Speedway. So, and it was the Andretti Green Racing team that pretty much swept that race. And going into Pocono, it looked like it was going to be that way again, but Team Ganassi had different plans as Scotty Dixon took the checkered flag with teammates Charlie Kimball in second and Dario Franchitti sweeping the podium. Will Power for Roger Penske wound up fourth. Joseph Newgarden for Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing with a fifth place finish. It was a good run for her team, and it's good to see her running a schedule. She used to be a guest on the show as well. And we had her on way back when she was a driver, winning her first ever pole, becoming the first woman to win a pole in a Major League Series. And, of course, the equipment she had back then wasn't the greatest, so then she decided to form her own team and step out of the car after a few years to have a family, and now trying to build it back up. So it's good to see her driver in fifth place. Maybe we get her back on one of these times. Sixth was Simone Pagenaud for Schmidt-Hamilton Racing. Sam Schmidt, another former driver, was injured in a wreck and ended his driving career, so he went on to become a car owner. Justin Wilson wound up seventh. Eighth was Elio Castroneves for Team Penske. Ninth was Eddie Carpenter, and the pole sitter Marco Andretti finished 10th. Simona Di Silvestro finished 11th. She had a ninth place starting spot, so she was running pretty good. And Pippa Mann, who started 21st, probably the best improvement of the ladies in finishing in 15th spot, gaining six positions to finish 15th. So time of the race was 2 hours, 4 minutes. Average speed, 192 miles an hour. Almost 193, margin of victory, 0.45 seconds. And there were 16 lead changes. There were 12 caution laps. There were only two cautions for 12 laps. And the six lead changes were amongst five drivers. So Indy's return to Pocono. Coming off pretty good, so it's good to see them back in the area. It was a matter of time when that was going to be able to happen. I know when they pulled out years ago, I think Danny Sullivan was the last winner up there the year after. It's either Danny Sullivan or, let's see, I think they only went 2 years after I was there. After Andretti won, it was either Sullivan or Rick Mears won that, and then Sullivan won the last one. But I have to check back in the record books to see exactly what happened there. Of course, this was only a 400-mile race, and back then it used to be 500 miles. So to save the wear and tear on the cars, Pocono was originally designed for Indy cars due to the fact that the flat layout and the long straightaways and the three different turns, a wide one. Then you got turn two, which is the tunnel, which is kind of more of a one you cut across instead of turning around, and then the sweep in turn three to come back down the big front straightaway. It was about 3,000 foot long, and they could fan out six wide in the IndyCar series. You can get four and five wide in, when the Sprint Cup cars get out there. So the IndyCars being that much narrower, it looked like, I guess, mad dash on the freeway in Los Angeles, where cars are all over the place and trying to get every piece of real estate they can. But not to ground to a halt like the L.A. freeway, but those who live in Los Angeles and know about that all too well. Well, the Nationwide Series came into Daytona, and it was getting kind of interesting there. Of course, Austin Dillon won his sixth oval track pole in a row. He would have had seven in a row had he not missed the pole in at Road America. It would have been a road course pole, but that's the only one he didn't get. But he's won every other pole from since then and the four before then. So it's two since and one before, so for six in a row. And they did wind up having to take this one to one green-white checker. Of course, you get down to worrying on fuel that late. Matt Kenseth, his first Nationwide win at Daytona in quite some time. Of course, he has a Daytona 500 victory last season in that rain-delayed, flame-delayed. You name it, everything went wrong with that one because it was supposed to be on a Sunday. Wound up on a Monday. Supposed to start at a certain time. And I think I was heading from my house in Virginia up to my other house in New Jersey, and I still wound up to catch the last three laps of that one. But Matt Kenseth taking the checkered flag for the Joe Gibbs Racing, being pushed by James Buescher. They seemed to hook up before and had some good tandem drafting running. And Buescher, who actually won the race in February, was a second-place finisher on Friday night. Third was Elliott Sadler with help from Kurt Busch in the number one City Chevrolet. Anybody remember the movie Days of Thunder? Yeah, you could probably pick it up on DVD or Blu-ray, or I don't know what they have it on nowadays, but it was the number one City Chevrolet Cole triple car. Of course, they were calling him Cole Trickle throughout the race, including Elliott Sadler, who got the benefit of the push. And it was good to see them resurrect that color for the number one car. He had a good seventh-place starting spot, and driving it for James Finch. Of course, Finch selling the team. Thought he had a buyer for it, but I guess he still owns it until I guess things change over, but he was in the number one car. Austin Dillon, the pole sitter, wound up fifth. Kyle Larson, I don't know what I could say anything more about this guy. He's impressive, and there's a chance there. Of course, he was in that wild wreck at Daytona. It was his car that came apart in February and injured some people in the grandstand. Of course, nobody was killed, but some people got hurt. And he's managing to figure out how to keep these cars on the ground and keep them together. So he ended up with a sixth-place finish. Sam Hornish Jr., is nipping away at that points lead from Reagan Smith. I think there's we'll get to more of that in a bit. But he finished in seventh. Reagan Smith, of course, was wound up in eighth, right behind him. Sam Hornish got the bonus points for leading the most laps, so that kind of helped, plus another point for finishing a spot ahead of Smith. We're going to watch that one a little tight. That's a tight race going down now. Ninth, Joey Logano. And 10th wound up being Trevor Bayne. Of course, one of the faster cars, Kyle Busch. Only finished 11th, but you can never count him out. He always finds a way to get towards the front. He didn't lead a lap at all this time because it just didn't work out that way. So we go down to the points lead. Reagan Smith with a six-point lead now over Sam Hornish Jr. It was eight coming into this race from last week. So Sam's chopped a couple of points off of that. Elliott Sadler maintains the third spot. He's eight behind Hornish. Justin Allgaier is fourth. Austin Dillon saddled in the fifth spot. Sixth is Kyle Larson. Brian Vickers is seventh. Parker Kligerman is eighth. Ninth is Brian Scott, who gained a spot. And tenth is Trevor Bayne. The manufacturer's points, it seems to be Toyota with 107 points over Ford with 106. Toyota has an extra win. Seven Toyotas have taken the checkered flag. Of course, I think most of them by Kyle Busch in this series. And, of course, Matt Kenseth with it on Friday night. Ford has six wins. Of course, Sam Hornish has one, and Trevor Bayne has one, and to name a couple, it's three for Chevy. And there are some Dodges in the field, but Dodge faded out. You're only allowed to use the previous year's cars for only so long. Of course, Morgan Shepherd has one, and I think he might be one of the few Dodges left. Mike Harmon has a Dodge, and that might be it, two Dodges. So they're using them up instead of having to buy new Chevys. Of course, Mike Harmon having some pending legal problems after being charged with grand larceny and theft of Jennifer Jo Cobb's car hauler. So of course, with Matt Kenseth taking the win, we'll see what Matt has to say as we go to the winner's press conference and pick up Matt Kenseth's remarks. And here's your Subway Firecracker 250 winner. And his comments after the race.
Okay, we've got our race winner for tonight's 12th annual Subway Firecracker 250 NASCAR Nationwide Series race, and it's Matt Kenseth. He drove the number 18 GameStop Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. He's joined by his crew chief, Matthew Lucas. Congratulations, Matt. This is your 27th NASCAR Nationwide Series win, your second NASCAR Nationwide Series win here at Daytona. And just talk about it. You had a strong car running up front most of the evening, and then, looked like to me, of course, what I know is very little, but it looked like to me that your restrictor plate racing is top of the line right now.
Yeah, I mean, we had a decent car. We didn't qualify quite as we hoped, but we got in the race and it drafted really well. Worked with some different cars during the day, just kind of didn't really have a solid plan worked out with anybody for the tandem thing, and ran with Kyle for a while and ran with Brian for a while until we got all knocked together there. And anyway, the 12 and the 22, I thought were definitely the strongest pair. I didn't think anybody was going to beat them unless something happened to them. Until we're running third or something, we're separated, and James was back there by himself and slowed up and grabbed him. And our two cars together with him pushing my car, we were incredibly fast. So once we had hooked up with him, I felt like we'd have a shot. But yet, these races are usually so crazy, and there's so much stuff at the end that usually gets tore up. You're not sure what's going to happen. So that last restart was really good. James really pushed me hard, and then I think Elliott was pushing him. I heard I couldn't see back that far, and we had a good head of steam off of turn two, and was able to separate ourselves a little bit.
And crew chief Matthew Lucas, congratulations on this victory here tonight. I know it's going to be a big win for you as a crew chief, and just talk about that.
Yeah, no, it is. This is my first win as a Nationwide Series crew chief. I've got quite a few. Is
you
guys can be a little more excited for him. He's won his first race. Look at that guy. He's doing the fake. He's doing it. Oh yeah, look at that. He got an ovation. I guarantee you won't get a standing one, but you got an ovation.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
No, but I, they're real sick of me. They're like, I hope Matt doesn't come back here for months. Anyway, carry on.
No, you can talk all you want there. No, I've got some wins, you know, in other positions on the team. My first is crew chief, so it's obviously really special. I'm excited to do with Matt at Daytona. It's to do it at a place like with the history here is really, really special. So I'm excited.
Congratulations. And we'll take questions now for Matt or Matthew. If you have one, raise your hand, and we'll get you the wireless mic.
I love it when Andrew carries that mic like that. I just want to walk up behind him and say hut.
Yeah, that's right.
There's your race winner and his crew chief, James Lucas, winning his first nationwide race as a crew chief. And here's your second place finisher, James Buescher, and Kyle Larson, the third place winner.
Okay, let's roll right into our post-race for tonight's 12th annual.
I mean, Kyle Larson, your top finishing rookie.
Subway Firecracker 250 NASCAR Nationwide Series event here at Daytona International Speedway. And our top Sunoco Rookie of the Year candidate. And also now he qualifies next week as well for the Dash for Cash promotion sponsored by Nationwide is Kyle Larson. He drives the number 32 Clorox Chevrolet for Turner Scott Motorsports. And Kyle, certainly an excellent showing out there at 10-40. Barry, another solid run, sixth place finish. You advance next week to win that $100,000 again at New Hampshire. Just talk about your evening out there, if you would, please.
Yeah, the first half wasn't too exciting. We got me and Justin Allgaier got split up, and we're proud of straightaway behind the lead pack, and just rode. And in the last 30 laps or so, it started getting wild again, and the restarts were pretty hectic, and worked well with Justin. He pushed me to the lead there for a little bit. I actually pushed James Buescher to lead for a couple laps or lap, and then he wasn't able to push me as well. So then in the last restart, I kept trying to get to Kurt Busch's rear bumper to help him, but I'd always have somebody side drafting me and pull me off of him. And then it was losing the pack on the last lap, and Austin Dillon was able to pick me up halfway on the backstretch and push me back up to, you know, fifth. And then I tried to get by Kurt on the line, and Austin got back by me. So I'll take a sixth. It's nice to, you know, have our Clorox Chevy in one piece across the finish line this time.
Okay, thank you, Kyle. And listen, our race runner-up in tonight's race is James Buescher, 2012 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series champion. He comes over to race in the Nationwide Series tonight, and he posts a solid second-place finish. He's up there pushing Matt Kenseth in the hunt for the win, and he drives the number 34 Florida Lottery Chevrolet for Turner Scott Motorsports. And congratulations, James. Talk about your experience out there tonight.
Well, I mean, early on, we just didn't really have a bunch of track position. You know, we were able to drive up through the field pretty good right off the bat, and then everybody started tandeming up, and we didn't really have a partner in the beginning. And we fell off the lead draft and hooked up with the 99, and he was able to push me all the way through the first round of pit stops, and it seemed like a really good tandem. We weren't losing any ground, but, you know, after the first couple cautions, when Kyle and I hooked up and went to the front, I knew he had a car capable of going up there and competing for the win. You know, he was able to push me right up around those guys, and not a lot of people get past the 12 and 22, so I think that said a lot about the way our cars work together. And you know, within 20 to go, you know, I was inside the top 10 and kind of the odd man out looking for a drafting partner, and saw the 20 car down on the infield mowing the grass, I guess, and Kenseth was able to work with us after that. Had lost his drafting partner, and you know, once we started working together, that's the first guy I could push all day. without getting hot. So we were able to work together, and everything worked out on the restarts, line up together, and you know, for that green white checkered, the plan was to push them and try to get as far out as we could. And if I had a big enough lead, I was going to try to make a move. But from the white flag, I was pushing water, and you know, the engine was getting pretty hot. So coming off four, I fell off his bumper, and it wasn't because I left it. It was because the engine was pretty cooked. So, you know, it stayed under us, got us to the finish line, and came home second. So really proud of everybody on the Florida Lottery team, and Reem, and everybody that helps us come nationwide racing.
All right, we'll take questions now for either Kyle or James. If you have one, raise your hand. We'll get you a wireless. Any questions for these?
And you have a second-place finisher as well. Of course, the top-finishing rookie, Kyle Larson. Elliott Sadler, who came in third. We're talking about the Dash for Cash. And Nationwide has put up a Dash for Cash for the top five finishers of each race to qualify, I think, from now until September. And Elliott Sadler was the first winner of the Dash for Cash. Of last week's qualifiers, he came in third. And, of course, going into next weekend's race, or the next time the we see where the Nationwide Series is racing next weekend. And we'll be... next Saturday. It'll be next Saturday in Loudoun, New Hampshire. So for the next race in Loudoun, the qualifiers will be Kenseth, Buescher, Sadler, Austin Dillon, and I don't think Kurt Busch will be eligible for it because he's not a Nationwide Series regular. So I think it would bump down to Kyle Larson. So actually, it won't be Kenseth because he's not a Nationwide regular. I think it's Sadler, Dillon, Larson, Hornish, Reagan Smith might be in it. The Buescher's running for the Truck Series title as well, so he's not running the Nationwide for points. So being he's not, and Kenseth's not, Kurt Busch isn't, so that would be Sadler, who did win the 100,000 with his third place finish at Daytona. Austin Dillon, Kyle Larson, that's three, count them. Four, Sam Hornish Jr., and five would be Reagan Smith. And it'll be those five guys running in for the Nationwide Dash for Cash. And we'll see what happens next week in Loudoun. Another flat 1 miler called the Magic Mile, and we'll see what happens there. Of course, the points as they stand now, it's Reagan Smith with a 6-point lead over Sam Hornish Jr., Elliott Sadler in third, 8 points behind Sam. 1 point behind Sadler is Justin Allgaier. 2 points behind Allgaier in fifth is Austin Dillon. So you got some tight running there. Kyle Larson in sixth. He's 25 back, so he's got a little making up to do. Seventh is Brian Vickers. Eighth, Parker Klugerman. Ninth, Brian Scott. And tenth is Trevor Bain. So that would be... top 10 you have in points. Of course, there were four cautions for 16 laps in the race, and a 9-minute and 49-second red flag after an accident involving three, four, five, six cars. There were four cautions for 16 laps, 31 lead changes amongst 14 drivers. So wasn't a dull race anyway because did wind up going through a green-white checker, and there were cautions coming out on toward the end of the race there, going all the way to lap 101. or lap 100, I should say. Of course, Kenseth taking the checkered flag. A little same thing of the incident happening with the Sprint Cup Series on Saturday night. They let him race even after they were starting to wreck on the white flag. The leaders would have been clear of that, but... They let him finish the race, and of course, another one happened after the checkered flag, wrecking a whole bunch more cars. He was sitting in Vince Bonfigli on Garage Talk Live on blogtalkradio.com. Don't forget Davidson's Gallery of Guns airs tonight at 8:30. If you're listening to me, you could DVR it or DVD or DVR it or tape it, or they replay it at 11:30 tonight, so you won't miss a thing if you wanted to tune in to hear Brittany Force. Should be calling us shortly. Looking forward to having her on as well. So she'll be calling in a few minutes, and we'll talk about the NHRA. The hell? Something happened here. I don't know what happened there, folks. Apparently, something cut off my feed there to the studio, but we're back on if you call a little bit. We're waiting for Brittany Force to call in. She should be joining us shortly. And we'll be talking to her for her first time here on Garage Talk Live. And, of course, be looking forward to have her on. She's the only one of the John Force Racing family we haven't had on yet, so it'll be good to have her take in her rookie season in Top Fuel. The nitro burning high horsepower, I tell you, takes a lot to hold in 10,000 horsepower. And the whole family does it. Of course, she's got the skinniest and the lightest of the cars, I think, but I think that should be her now. I'd like to welcome to the show, driver for the Top Fuel NHRA, Brittany Force. Brittany, welcome to Garage Talk Live.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you're the, I guess, remaining Force family member I have yet to interview.
Well, I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, you decided to make the jump into the NHRA Nitro Division, going for Top Fuel this year as a rookie. Why not the family business and the funny cars?
You know, I always drove dragsters, and that just made the most sense to me. I drove a super comp for 3 years. I drove an A-field dragster for 2 years, and just the easier, it made more sense. The transition from an A-field car to a top-field car made the most sense to me, and I've just always been, I mean, I love funny cars. My whole family does funny cars. I would never be opposed to the idea of jumping in a funny car and getting a license, but for me, that was just what I was attracted to, and that's what I wanted to get. You know, I just wanted to jump in that seat and give it a shot, and, you know, we needed a little change at John Force Racing. We have, you know, so many funny car teams, and you know, we needed a top fuel team.
Well, I like that you decided to go into the top fuel division and spread the family out a little bit this way. Take it. You can have the chance of taking home more than one Wally per weekend, you know?
Yeah, that's something I, you know, I really look forward to. I hope one of these days, one of our funny cars and one of our and a top fuel car, I hope we could all meet in the winner's circle, because that would just be unreal. That would be so exciting. And, you know, I think there's a good chance of it. Once we, you know, we're this top fuel team, this Castrol Edge top fuel team, you know, we're learning a lot together, because most my guys, my crew chief, from funny cars. They've only worked with funny cars. So it's new to them. It's new to me as a driver. And it's just, you know, we're all learning together. So I think we're getting there slowly. We've had our struggles this year, but we're definitely moving in the right direction.
Well, that's good. I think you've made just about every event except for this past weekend, which sad to say, but seems like your progression, you know, the more you get in there. Now, is your top fuel nitro car, you're running the Ford Boss 500 as well?
Yes, just like the funny cars, we drive, you know, it is a top fuel car, and we're the only Ford engine out there. But, yes, we drive the Ford Boss 500 engine.
Now, I was wondering if you guys were the only Ford out there, because I don't really recollect too many of them there. I think most of them are Toyotas and...
Yeah, there hasn't been a Ford in top fuel in forever, so it's pretty exciting to, you know, be out there new for John Prost Racing in a top fuel car, but also have that Ford engine.
Now, the thing about it is, though, with, of course, your dad's having another outstanding year again this year, and your sister building off her Rookie of the Year as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to compare notes, being your car's a lot different, runs a lot faster than their car, so there's not too much information you could trade. Is there anybody you talk to in the top fuel division that helps you out, or is it pretty
we are in different categories, but still, if I have a question about the car or the track or, you know, anything being out there on the road, I typically go to Courtney. Courtney's the one person I go to because even though it's a different car, she still knows exactly what I'm going through. She did a year, you know, of testing in her funny car, and then, you know, she came out and debuted in Pomona just like I did. So I go to her. I go to my dad. I go to Mike Neff, Robert Height. I have so many great teachers around me, and obviously my dad's been out here forever. I know he's never driven a top fuel car, but still he knows these tracks like no one else knows them, and, you know, I really have the best teachers around me. But I've also, a lot of the top fuel guys out there have been awesome as well. I've had, you know, so many of them come over to me, you know, after runs or after the weekend and you know, tell me that I'm doing a great job and offer their advice, or if I ever have any questions, I could talk to them. So everyone's been really supportive out there.
Well, that's pretty cool. I think right now the only ladies in the top fuel field are you and Leah Pruitt. Hillary Will was in last year, but I don't see her this year. Is she?
Yep, it's me and Leah Pruitt out there. She's an awesome driver. She's a great girl. I've run her, you know, a few times. I ran her last weekend in qualifying. And, you know, I'm glad to have another girl out there. She's an awesome driver, so.
And like I said, the only one, but you seem to be doing better than she is right now, because you make more elimination. You've made the elimination rounds now
We've had a few round wins. We keep getting stumped on second round. My goal was really to qualify at every national event. But, you know, coming out as a rookie team, that's not easy to do, especially because we don't have, you know, we don't have other top fuel teams to get information from or learn from, you know, over the past years. We're building all of this right now, brand new this year. So we're really doing everything on our own, and it is a struggle. And, you know, we're just doing the best that we can. But she's done great, too. And, you know, my sister actually saw her this weekend and talked to her. I didn't see her. We were so busy. I barely saw her. I saw her at the top end after our run. And, you know, I look forward to seeing her. I think the next one will be Indy she'll be at, so I look forward to seeing her there.
Well, that's cool. And, you know, the fact that you're doing it on your own in a division that the family isn't used to, I think as the accomplishments come, it should make you feel that much better knowing that you basically have to do it as the only Ford team and a new team at that, coming from a long line of funny car people.
Yeah, I mean, if we came out here and it was just easy, it wouldn't be as exciting as it is. And I know, I mean, we didn't qualify this last weekend, and it was such a bummer. We obviously wanted to get qualified. We wanted to go rounds and move up in the points, and we just got stopped right there at qualifying. So it's definitely really tough. But, you know, the Castrol Edge team is just going to use that to We're going to use that as our motivation. We're going to use that to build off of and just pump us up and get us ready for the Western Swing, and we're going to just put all that energy and everything into, you know, getting qualified in the top half of the field and going rounds.
Anything going back to some tracks that you've been through already is going to help? Like, you'll be going back to, like, so the Western Swing, going back down to Charlotte and all that kind of good stuff. And
yeah, I think that's always helpful. I mean, to go down the first time for a new driver to go down a track they've never been down, you know, you have to learn the track. Every single track is completely different. No track is the same. So, you know, hopping in the car and going down a track that I ran in Super Comp and A Field, it just makes me feel, you know, more comfortable, more, I'm more familiar on the track, and I think that, you know, that gives the driver the advantage, you know, and makes things a little bit less challenging.
Well, how did you like your first experience at Charlotte when they had the four wide nationals? It must be pretty intimidating for a rookie driver.
You know, it definitely was. My biggest concern was just the whole staging process, because coming out there, just starting this year, it was already difficult for me because I tested all last year. All last year I tested in my top field car without anybody in the lane next to me. I was just making passes all by myself, so I never really got to practice on the tree and what it would be like to stage with somebody and, you know, waiting until they pull in. So just adjusting to that, I think I maybe made two or three runs with somebody in the lane next to me before I came out for the first race of the year in Pomona. So, you know, that was definitely a transition for me. That was difficult. And, you know, I'm still picking it up. I'm still learning about it. And then going into that four wide where I'm like, whoa, I don't have to worry about one person laying next to me. I have to worry about three. You know, that was really, I was worried about it. I was definitely nervous about it. But I knew that once I made one pass, it would be fine. And my nerves, you know, they would go away and you know, we'd go after it. And, it was definitely exciting. It's exciting for the fans. It's something you have to see, just seeing, you know, that much horsepower go down the track. But, you know, once we were done with the weekend, I was glad to get back to, you know, the normal drag racing two cars.
Yeah, it's easy to keep an eye on. Now, do you think things like, well, I need to stage in a little deeper, or my need to pay attention for my reaction time to be a little quicker off the tree? And, I mean, that's all that runs through your head. Then you have to worry about not smoking the tires or
mm-hmm.
getting off the line good or smoking them halfway down. I mean, is there any amount of testing and that can prepare you for all that, or is this something you got to feel as the weekend goes by and the track conditions?
I really feel it's a lot about focus, just really focusing on it, practicing, and experience, and mostly experience, which I don't have much experience is the problem. I mean, I'm going up against some of these drivers, top field drivers out here who have been out here forever, so they have so much more experience than me. But just every run I make down the track with staging, with, you know, when the car smokes the tires or whatever the case is, I learn something each run, and I take that to the next run. And, you know, we might be testing pretty soon. I hope we do, because I love to get in that car and really, you know, play around and try some new things with the tree, because I don't want to risk, you know, a qualifying pass, or, you know, obviously I would never do it on race day, try something new, but it's nice to be able to test and have the opportunity to, you know, try new things.
Do you find that the transition from your alcohol dragster to the nitro car, I mean, there's a difference of about, 5,000 horsepower, I think?
Yeah, it definitely picks up. You know, it's funny, when I went to my A-Field car, it was Jerry Darien's A-Field dragster, and compared to my top-field car, everything was completely reversed in the car. The cars, the chassis are pretty much the same, but everything in the car, from my chutes, the reverser, my seal levers, everything was completely reversed and backwards. So I hopped in the car, and I was like, hold on, you push the chutes which way? And it was just completely different from what I've been doing for all those years. So the first time I ever hopped in the top field car, I put big pieces of red tape with arrows of what direction was, you know, my shutoff and how to get the car stopped, just because I was worried if, you know, I headed down the track, I'd just go back to my normal routine and I'd be hitting my, you know, chutes the wrong direction. But once I made a few passes, you know, I just adjusted to it, and now I couldn't imagine jumping back in the other car. But the difference between the two cars is you could definitely feel how much more power, you know, that the top fuel car has. I mean, when you launch, it just throws you back in the seat. And the thing I really noticed is it, compared to an A-fuel car, it really continues to pull you down the track. I mean, you launch and you're heading down there and you're like, wow, that's fast. And then it's like, it picks up all over again and you're still, you know, just hauling butt down that track. And until you hit the chutes, it's just, I mean, it really is a rush. And hitting those chutes still, sometimes it shocks me just because you really feel them. I mean, it's negative G's when you hit the chutes.
Wow, I could imagine that. And then you figure the time it takes to get down the track from one car to the other as well. I mean, plus you're running what? You're still running a quarter mile in the alcohol, but you're running 1,000 foot in the top fuel. So you're down there at that end of at the finish line a whole hell of a lot quicker.
Yeah. Oh, everything came quicker. I noticed my whole routine for shutting the car off, I had to pick it up that much quicker just because my car got down there so much faster, and I was running out of track space. You know, the first few passes I made, they were like, when I jumped out, they were like, you got to get those chutes out quicker, and I was just not used to that because, you know, in the fuel car, it was a little different. So that track comes so much quicker in the top fuel car.
That's a good badge. And, of course, you went to Epping, New Hampshire for the first time, so I guess that's probably the only track where I guess everybody was on equal footing a couple weeks ago. How did you find
that? I was hoping that would work to my advantage because it was a new track for everybody. Nobody had information of runs or anything on the track from, you know, last year. So I felt like I was kind of starting on the same playing field as everybody. But that was a tough weekend for us too, but we're going to try to bounce back. We're changing some things up for this Western Swing, and I'm home now. I'm off for a week, but I can't wait to get back out on the road. I've been home for not even a day. I'm ready to get back out there.
So what do you do while you're at home now after all the traveling and get some relaxing and hit the beach a little bit, get some suntan?
Yeah, actually today is my brother-in-law, Danny, my older sister, Ashley, her husband. So his birthday and my birthday, we share a birthday. So we're celebrating tonight. We're going to go to dinner somewhere down by the beach and, you know, just hang out with the whole family right on the water and get dinner. So I'm looking forward to that.
What day's your birthday?
What's that? Today. Both of our birthdays are today.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I
celebrated last night. My whole team, we all went out to dinner in Norwalk, and they got me a cake and saying happy birthday. So it was a lot of fun just being with them because they're the people I spend the most time with. They were my best friends, and it was just awesome to be out there and, you know, celebrate a birthday with them.
Well, that's cool. Of course, 2 weeks next one, Bandimere Speedway, Denver, Colorado for the Mile High Nationals. Is that your first trip out to that track? Is that another new one for you?
Looks it. I'm not sure if I've raced there. I may have in Super Comp. I don't think I ever ran there in A-Fuel. I actually haven't been to the track in a while. You know, last year I never made it. The last few years I never made it there. I was still in school a few years ago, and that was one track I haven't been to in a while, so I'm excited to go back. It's one of my mom's favorites. She loves Denver. But I'm really looking forward to Sonoma. Sonoma is a track that feels like home to me. I've been down it so many times. I love the track. It's beautiful out there, and you know, just I love the way the track's set up. It's a long shut-off, and, you know, in a top-fuel car, I couldn't ask for anything better.
That's for sure. And that's also wine country out there, so there's plenty to do if you're not at the track. Or once you're done with being at the track, you can always go hit some of the vineyards and have a good time. Well, Brittany,
Sunday night, we're hoping for that.
That's it. Taking the Wally with you. Shame the Wally doesn't have a cup on it. You can put a wine in there and drink out of that at the Stanley Cup. That would be different. But, Brittany, I'd like to thank you for coming on for your debut appearance, and hopefully you can join us in the future. Your sister Courtney was on like 5 times last year, and it seemed like every time she came on, something good happened. So we'll see what happens. So maybe we could bring you some luck this in a couple weeks in Denver.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're quite welcome, and you take care and have fun out in Denver, and we'll keep an eye on you, see how you progress, and
thank you.
Just love having the only Ford driver in top fuel on, as well as the rest of the Force family of John Force Racing. And you always, the team has always been good coming on and gracing my airtime and my listeners. So now we had
Absolutely.
You, now you're
Thank
part
you.
Of the mix.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, take care now.
Thank you. You too.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
There you have a Top Fuel rookie, Brittany Force, joining us here on Garage Talk Live. And fifteen minutes. Kept her on 15, not too long. It's her birthday. I can't keep her on that long. I didn't know it was her birthday. They should have told me. Happy birthday, Brittany, if you're still listening. And let's get over to the Coke Zero 400, where it seemed to be one of those days where it looked like it was going to be Jimmy Johnson's day, and it started out that way, and Jimmy led four times for 94 laps. His closest competitor on track as far as laps led was Kurt Busch. Denny Hamlin had a few laps led, but he was involved in the first big one, not the second one after the checkered flag was, or after the white flag was dropped. Actually, it was after the checkered flag was dropped. He was involved in one when the white flag was dropped. The Coke Zero 400 seemed like it was going to be a quick one, not too many yellows early. Jimmy Johnson pretty much having his way with the field all day long, as it was. So it all came down to what was going to happen towards the end of the race. And as it turns out, it came down to, again, the last few laps with green, not an official overtime green-white checker shootout, but they did drop the green flag with like three laps to go. There were six cautions for 27 laps. An accident on the front stretch on lap 157 was red flagged it for 8 minutes and 53 seconds. That's the one where on lap 150, that was where Denny Hamlin hit the wall and A.J. Allmendinger came in hard and jacked the back end of the car up. That caught Jeff Gordon and Brian Vickers and the 83 car. And the seven, Dave Blaney in that one, I took them out, so they red flagged that to clean that off. And as they took the checker, as they took the white flag, there was an accident where Casey Kane got booted into the inside wall in the backstretch, and that involved Marcus Ambrose and Jimmy Johnson had a little problem. I think he's the one, he wiggled into Ambrose and got into Casey Kane and punted Kane into the wall. I mean, it didn't hurt Johnson's car, but he was involved in it. And then the one that happened after the wreck, after the race, or as the Jimmy Johnson was taking the checkered flag for the sweep at Daytona this year, and then you had everybody behind getting involved in the wreck. Of course, they did finish with one lap overtime, 161 laps. And that involved Danica Patrick, Gilliland, Yelly. I think Jeff Burton might have been involved with that, the quick set Chevy. Of course, Jeff Craven gracing our airwaves last week. Tony Stewart, the white pick to win this race, came in second. Third was Kevin Harvick. Fourth, Clint Bowyer. And fifth was teammate and car owner Michael Waltrip. Kurt Busch wound up sixth. And I'll tell you, if he can avoid some of these wrecks with as good as he's been running, he'd be up in the points. Jamie McMurray, a good run for him. Paul Dale Jr. wound up eighth. Ninth was Casey Mears. And tenth was Ryan Newman. Danica was 14th after starting 11th. She was flirting with the top 10 through late in the afternoon, and it wound up to be she was involved in that wreck at the end of the race, and I think she would have been in ninth or tenth, but wound up with an official 12th place finish. Jeff Gilliland was involved in that. I think Greg was Greg. I think he was in that one. Yeah, so Biffle was in there. There, Quapple, Terry Labonte. I didn't even know Terry Labonte was out there. He was in the 32 car. Sometimes you don't notice Terry Labonte on the. Well, he always was like that. You never noticed him on the track until the end of the race, anyway. So points as they stand now. Jimmy Johnson is your points leader. Second now is Clint Bowyer. Third, Carl Edwards. Clint Bowyer, now the point spread is a lot bigger. It's 49 points between Johnson and Bowyer. With the fourth win, he ties Matt Kenseth for when they start the chase as the top seeds. There's a battle going there to see who's the one seed and who's the two seed. So as long as they keep necking wins, That'll all sort out at the end there. And Edwards, he's third in the points. Fourth is Kevin Harvick with two wins. Dale Jr. is fifth in points, so a good run for him. Matt Kent is sixth. Kyle Busch is seventh. Eighth is Greg Biffle. Ninth is Kurt Busch. He's made it into the top 10 in points. Gets himself a win. He can cement that. But if he stays in the top 10, he's guaranteed. Of course, he'll be tied with a bunch of guys with no wins at the bottom of the seeding. And, of course, your two wild card spots, which would be Tony Stewart's 10th. 11th is Martin Truex Jr., and 12th is Casey Kane. So being those guys both have wins, they might have that wild card spot cemented down. Anybody down the bottom of the list? David Reagan has a win, but he's so far back in points, I don't think it would make a difference. So right now, as you see the top 12 in points, that's probably going to be your chase lineup should it remain that way. One of these guys gets another win, and anybody in the top 10 could shuffle. So just the top 10 are guaranteed into the chase, and then there's a wild card shootout, of course, coming. It all comes to a culmination after race 26 in Richmond. So this week we're going out to Loudoun, New Hampshire. And for right now, it looks looking to see who I'm going to make for my pick. So as we go out to Loudoun, New Hampshire, I'm going to go with the number 15 car of Clint Bowyer. I think from what I've seen, he runs good there, so that's going to be my pick. Hopefully I won't jinx him. He could use another win under his belt. Of course, winning the road course didn't hurt, but you know, you want to win on some ovals. I'm going to go. If you want to post your pick, you can go to the Facebook page, Garage Talk Live Facebook page, and list your picks. Well, I'm Vince Bonfigli. Hope everybody's enjoyed the show tonight. Tune in next week on Garage Talk Live when we'll have, I don't know yet. You'll have to check the Facebook page. We post everything there, or Twitter, twitter.com/GarageTalkLive. But wherever I post on the Facebook winds up on Twitter because I got them linked, so you won't miss out on a thing. But I appreciate it if you all went over and either followed us on Twitter and liked our Facebook page. This way, everybody out there, we can get grow the fan base. You can get the links to Blog Talk Radio every week and all that good stuff. So I'm Vince Bonfigli. good night and good racing.